This is Elijah, and I am here with Charlotte Ungar, another member of the Long River Review.
Hi, I'm Charlotte. Really happy to be here.
So Charlotte's serving as the poetry editor and consulting translations editor for the magazine. She also managed to tie for first place this year for UConn's Wallace Stevens Poetry Prize contest and managed to win the Connecticut Poetry Circuit contest, where she is one of five undergraduate students in the state that is touring her poetry around the state, which is really impressive. So congratulations.
Thank you, Elijah.
So what's your experience been reading for the Poetry Circuit and also just winning the Wallace Stevens Poetry Prize Award?
So I would say first with the Poetry Circuit, I think that I'm becoming much more adjusted to my poetry is not something that I create for myself to read to myself or to read in a workshop, but something that people actually are associating with, like, me reading to them. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to be a speaker, or, you know, maybe, like, what I was trying to convey in the poem might come out a little bit differently if I'm up in a crowd. I think it forces you to be confident in what you wrote, even if maybe you aren't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the performance aspect is so different, especially because prose, that's not as much of a thing, but poetry is also a spoken medium. Like, that's kind of half of it.
Absolutely. I think that you're totally right in that. I think there are certain poems that when you read it aloud, it's a completely different experience. Or maybe you read it on the page and you think, wow, this is gonna, you know, read so well aloud. Mm-hmm. So I've never really thought about that with my own work because I have such, like, an internal experience. I spent hours maybe, like, writing it, and then I think, like, maybe I'll have to read it, maybe. So it's definitely different, and I think it does complement the experience of working for the Long River Review, reading so many submissions. Because I don't have to think about them being read aloud, but I still have to consider how they might be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm using the experience with the circuit as being a better reader of other people's poetry and my poetry, and just, like, applying that as a lens to when I was thinking about what would be, you know, the best fit for the Long River Review, even if they're not going to be spoken. You know, people are still going to read them maybe aloud.
Yeah, that's really interesting to hear. I'm glad that experience has helped you become a better editor for the Long River Review. Could you tell me a little bit about your writing process or how you find time to write as a busy college student?
That is a really great question. I think that that's a question that whenever I talk about this with other people who also like to write, especially creatively, we seem to all have this similar habit of if you really enjoy creative writing and you try to do it yourself, you just, like, lose all time when you do try to do it. I don't know if that's maybe just me. I don't know if you relate, but when I try and sit down and write a poem, I feel like an hour will go by and it'll be one line.
Mm-hmm.
Or in comparison, maybe I didn't even think I was going to write a poem, and I just had this idea in my mind that I was trying to get down on a page, and maybe it takes an hour and I write a full poem in an hour. But, you know, in other times it might take way longer than that. And I think that I think I do still struggle with that, feeling like I need to prioritize the poem because I'm so loyal to what it can be. Mm-hmm. And, like, what it's not at the moment, maybe. I feel just, like, very aware of, like, its potential, I think. Or I try to be. In terms of my routine with school, I think that after I come back from a writing workshop, I like to think about what happened in the writing workshop and try and write down ideas when I'm inspired as soon as possible. I try and write down things in my notes app, or even just sort of put down good lines on the page, create multiple documents, because I think having everything on one document is probably a disservice to yourself because you're, like, limiting how a line can turn into two poems.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I really try and do that. I'll have, like, three tabs open for Google Docs. I'll just keep trying to put things down and then take the other things that maybe I wrote down in my notes app and see how I can sort of put it in certain points, sort of like collaging, like if you have physical paper, mm-hmm. and try and think how I can do that digitally. But I think especially realizing what time might work for you. So I'm definitely a night writer, mm-hmm. I think, like for sure. I'm just a night person in general. I've heard of people who will wake up early and they'll have an hour of free time in the morning before they have things to do, and they like to write then.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me, especially as someone who's also tends to stay up later than waking mm-hmm. up early to carve out time. Charlotte also has a poem prepared that she submitted that helped her win the Wallace Stevens Poetry Prize. Would you care to introduce it and read it for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So this sort of goes back to our little discussion about routines with writing. This was a piece that I wrote really quickly compared to other things. I think it took me an hour, which for poetry for me is kind of unheard of. I feel like I tend to just work on things for so long. But this was something that it was inspired by some time in, mainly with my mother in Italy. We were visiting my great-grandparents' home, and walking around in the area, I felt this like sense of normalcy that I just wasn't used to in the surrounding environment. You had these really old, beautiful churches that, you know, they weren't like tourist destinations. It was just, you know, it was just the like town over, or, you know, there were like empty places, empty pews. And I just started thinking about the empty spaces there. And I started thinking about how so much of the artwork in the churches were like still beautiful, but they were fading.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know how to describe that change that I was observing. So I tried to sit down and write this poem about it. This poem is called Collision. Women are chipped off the walls here. Only the stone itself did it. Etched Mary's gold hair into a daffodil. Do you think the children know? Little moon faces playing tag under the passion of Christ. I must confess, I sat in the pews all afternoon and did not pray. Watched your back curl beside me. Took note of the outreach brochures tossed beneath my feet. I must confess again, I don't think I've ever prayed. Though I enjoy the suffering of a fair woman cloaked in blue. When you begged me to stay living, I turned to the alphabet. But there is no word for a face formed from every face it meets. Instead, I swear, I saw two sleepless statues try to hold each other's faces. So this poem was the most recent of the poems that I submitted for Wallace Stevens. And it was just a prose poem that I sort of worked around into something that had a form.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me it was important to leave something that I spent so little time on and feel like it was worthwhile enough.
Yeah, is that something, do you often revise your poems, like extensively, always trying to make them better, even when they might be good enough?
I am like an obsessive reviser. I feel like you would understand.
Definitely.
I think that there is so much opportunity in revisions and in editing. I love editing other people's work. My favorite thing to do is when someone brings in a poem to a workshop and you can just see the little rearrangements that might generate a new meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they don't want to keep that, and even if they don't want to, you know, do that, they still are aware of it. And I think it's really cool to give people options for what you can do, and then you use your artistic judgment to, like, look at your different options.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I definitely do that to myself. However, I think I struggle to sort of be the editor that I need. I think that it's a lot easier to over-edit. I think it's easier to look at other people's work.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. It's especially for an hour, I think that's a very impressive poem. It's such a almost dreamlike sequence, I think, with how the thoughts connect. And then the imagery feels really solemn, especially like the first few lines. Like there's such a, maybe severity is a better word, but it's such an interesting read, especially hearing you read it instead of me just reading it, you know, in my head or even out loud the way I would imagine it. But it's so different when the actual creator then gives their own voice to it.
I think so too. I think that when I first read this aloud, the first time I read this aloud was, I think, on the Connecticut Poetry Circuit. It was our first stop, and it was at Trinity College. So that was really weird for me because this wasn't something I brought into a workshop. Mm-hmm. This was something I wrote a few nights before, I think, like a final portfolio was due. I was just feeling a little bit unhappy with the work I had done in the semester, and I was like, let's see if I can do something new. And I think in those moments, the best stuff can happen, or maybe not the best, but, you know, stuff that you weren't used to. I think there are things in the poem that I like more than others, but I also think that that's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. As you said, best to leave it as is sometimes, mm-hmm. especially as a creative person where you always can think you can do better, and sometimes you don't have to.
Mm-hmm. There is one thing that I think I will add about the poem. So I didn't workshop it exactly, but I changed the ending. So with the sleepless statues thing, that wasn't near the end. And I rearranged it and I put it near the end. And there's that like repetition of the faces,
mm-hmm.
which I think for me was like the biggest part of the poem. And I think I didn't like realize how it might change by putting it at the end again, or like bringing it up again. But I think I feel pretty happy I did.
Yeah, I think it's such an interesting image to end on. And I guess one more thing, I think collision is such an almost, I don't know if abrasive is the right word, but it's a powerful noun as a title when the piece doesn't feel as aggressive, maybe. So could you just expand on how you titled it that way?
Yeah, totally. I think something I was thinking about was different. Actually, you said it perfectly, like an abrasiveness, but a sort of quiet abrasiveness. When I think of, if you've ever heard of people talk about geologic time,
mm-hmm.
you know, like humans are living in, you know, the world on geologic time is like so intense. Like there's just, it's like violent.
Yeah.
Like thinking about like the planet in Earth time, it's like violent. And geologists will tell you human time is like the most peaceful. You're experiencing things so slowly in comparison to the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there's like a way that you can apply that, I think, to everyday life. Like I'm thinking about the building of the church and the statues and whatnot. And like being in my time, everything is so like slow. And I take that for granted almost, but it still is a sort of collision. It's like a collision between you and like your environment. I think that I was also thinking about like a sense of intimacy that we may not notice from things that we deem as like forgotten or, mm-hmm. or of the past. So I think that there's like this kind of resurfacing sense of like connectivity that I think I was trying to emulate. And I think I was thinking about things that people just pass by and they might deem as being like an object, like a statue.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, it's still like it's resembling a person in some way, and like hundreds of years after it's still made, like there's still like a collision going on.
Oh, that's really cool. I feel like they just added like so many layers to all the lines that I did not see when I read it or when you read it before. So that's really cool to hear. I think that's all I have, but is there any upcoming readings you're doing or places we might be able to see your work featured that you'd like listeners to know about?
Yeah, sure. I wish I could say that there were more places to like look things up of mine. I have one reading coming up. This last reading on the Connecticut Poetry Circuit, I believe it is April 23rd. And that will be at Yale at the Robert Frost Room, I believe. Those details will probably be posted on the Yale website, I think. But that'll be the last tour.
Exciting. hope those go well. Thank you, Charlotte, for talking to me a bit about your poetry.
Thank you so much, Elijah. You had great questions. I really appreciated it.
Hello, everyone. Today I'm here with Jenna Ulizio, winner of the Edward R. and Francis Schrebler Collins Literary Prize. Jenna, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm really happy to be here. As you said, my name is Jenna Ulizio. I'm a junior here at UConn, and I'm studying English and history, and I'm doing a minor in digital public history, and I'm from Durham, Connecticut.
Awesome. That's a cool assortment of interests. And can I ask, what is your writing background? I know you're an English major, but have you done writing before that?
Yes, I've been writing creatively since maybe like the sixth grade, and it's always just been something I've really enjoyed doing. I started off with poetry because it was shorter, so I was able to do like my daily writing assignments really quickly, but I started getting more and more story ideas, and it's just something I've been doing for a while now.
That's awesome. I would say I'm pretty similar. I also started getting into writing pretty early, like sixth grade, middle school stuff, and really got into poetry and expanded from there. So what was your process like writing 11 Things You Don't Do, and maybe what inspired you?
Yeah, so I actually wrote this for a creative writing class here at UConn. It was with Professor Forbes, and one of the prompts that he gave us was title a story 11 Things You Don't, and then it was left blank. So I actually went back to the title last. That was one of the hardest things for me to figure out. But what I did is I had this idea for a while for a story, and I just had this like character living in my head. So I thought using this short story would be a good excuse to kind of get more into the mind of that character and just figure out what makes her tick. So I wrote a list of things that she reminds herself while she's going about like the actions of the story. So I was trying to come up with different things that she would constantly be reminding herself, like each time she does this type of work. And ultimately, I came back to the title at the end once I had the list in mind, and it was all things that she wouldn't do.
Interesting, because I was going to ask you about the format of the story, but understanding that it's a prompt makes a lot of sense. And I feel like that's kind of a tricky prompt, so kudos to you for navigating that. And could you give us a summary/explanation of your story?
Sure. So I like to tell people, because I told a lot of family members, like, oh, this is such exciting news that I had. And of course, they asked me what it was about. So I always like to tell them that the story is about someone who does not really like their job, but has to do their job anyway. And it's following her as she goes about doing her job and the way she kind of rationalizes it to herself why she's doing this.
Great explanation. I love that. And now, Jenna's going to read us the first two paragraphs of the story to give you guys a feel of what it is.
1. When you leave, don't make a sound. Getting out of the painted lady is the test. How do you want to be seen in the city tonight? Or how do you not want to be seen? Slipping out into the rush of the parlor, I blend into the crowd. Going unseen is impossible. Everyone in the city wants to look at everything. The trick is to exist at their periphery, noticed just at the leaving. The nights when I get stopped by a stranger stumbling from the bar or with a hand curling too tightly around my wrist are the nights that turn my stomach. The other girls around the room never make eye contact with me. The few that know what I'm doing don't like it. The others just don't like me. I wade through clouds of perfume and smoke as if I belong, and then leave out the front door before anyone thinks to stop me.
Thank you. And now, this piece won for fiction, and I wonder what genre you feel most connected to and why.
With fiction, I always like a little bit of the strange and unusual, so I'm always drawn to some sort of fantasy or speculative element. We all live in the real world, and I like to imagine there's like more going on than what we see, or I just like to imagine something different because sometimes real life gets a little boring, so I like to make a different world for myself.
Amen to that. Now, I read your story, even though I'm a panelist for creative nonfiction, so unfortunately this wasn't in my range, but I did have access to it. So some notes as a reader and panelist is I was really impressed how this story unfurled itself to the reader, and that sort of seamless transitions from the present moment to past reminiscing was done so well. And it was a really mysterious piece. As a reader, I had to piece together bits of information to figure out, like, who this person is and why we're following them. And I'm just a sucker for the theme of a crazy, passionate artist and the hypothetical lengths that people will go to. And this story has a clear sort of climax. But at least for me, I think the climax was really assisted by the self-reflection and inside voice of the character afterwards that was quite, like, scary and thrilling. And overall, you did an amazing job, obviously. And I'm really excited for people to get the chance to read it. And afterwards, I had some questions. How long was your writing and editing process when you took this class?
Yeah, well, first, thank you so much for all of those kind words. I really appreciate that. But for writing this, that's actually a really great question. I don't remember. I know it was a few days to, I know I took a few days at least to figure out the outline, and I started with the list of 11 things. And from there, I was kind of able to figure out what plot beats would go along with them. And I think I took maybe a few days to first draft it out, and then I sat with it for a lot longer. And because it was for a class, I maybe had about a month from when I wrote it for the first deadline, and then at the end of the semester, I had to turn it in again. So about a month.
Cool. And what was your reaction to winning the Collins Literary Prize?
Maybe I should not say this on air, but I was at work and I had submitted a lot of different creative writing pieces to different submission spots right before winter break. And I had also submitted a lot of internship applications at that same time. So I was sitting at work and just in my head, I was like, I should check my email. Like, there's something in my email I have to check right now. And I had kind of forgotten about this one in the rush of other deadlines. So this was not the email I was expecting at all. And I read it, I stared at it, I turned my phone off, tried to do my work again, and it wasn't happening. So I had to, like, read the email again to make sure it was real. And I was just so excited. I work in the library basement, so they can't hear you scream down there. I did not scream. That was a joke. But I was just super thrilled. And I was like, I need to tell everyone that this just happened.
That's amazing. I love that. And lastly, to wrap this up, where do you see writing going for you career-wise?
Yes, I'm hoping to write more and publish more. It's a dream of mine to publish a novel someday. I'm a junior, so right now I'm eyeing my honors senior thesis, and I'm planning on writing, like, a queer, dark academia-ish, horror-ish novel for that. So I'm just hoping to keep writing more poetry, writing more short stories, and branching out and doing a bunch of different things.
Thank you, Jenna, for coming on, and congratulations on your writing award, and good luck to you on your future endeavors.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Thank you guys for listening to this episode of Long River Rewind. We'd like to give a special shout out to UConn's radio station, WHUS Stores, for letting us use their studio and equipment.
You can listen to all our episodes on the Long River Rewind website, the WUS website, Spotify, and other streaming services. Stay tuned for our next episode interviewing the winner of the Aetna Prize for Translations. Bye!